Welcome to Free Speech with CR. I'm Molly Blakemore, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Keith Flamer.
Hi, Molly. It's great to be here with you today. And with us are two fabulous beekeepers, if I can use that word, Angela Stewart and Valerie Elder, both teachers at CR. So first question is, how has beekeeping become such a strong culture in Humboldt County? And what does it actually mean to be a beekeeper?
I think it's always been around because before I started keeping bees, like I'm a Humboldt County local and I always like have this roster of like things that seem very, very like Humboldt County to do. And beekeeping has kind of always been on that list. But it wasn't until summer recently that I actually started. But it's a fun hobby. It's rewarding. It's particularly the good place to do beekeeping as well. Connects you to nature. It's neat to talk about. Like, why wouldn't you want to do it?
How did you get into it? Well, my mom was a beekeeper briefly, and I took the class at Cal Poly Humboldt that's focused on beekeeping. That's taught from some of our awesome community members. But I think in Humboldt County, we have agriculture as a strong part of our vibrant community. Beekeeping isn't necessarily the hugest part of that, but we have a lot of people who are interested in living sustainable lifestyles and connecting to nature. And I think beekeeping is something that you can never really know exactly what's going on. And so it's a sense of curiosity. And I think at CR, we do have a sense of curiosity, whether that's sort of how can we best help students advising or teaching in our classrooms. So I think being curious is part of being a beekeeper. So I think that's an underlying theme of that beekeeping culture.
So how long have you been beekeepers?
I think this is my sixth year at this point. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this is about my fourth year. I actually took the beekeeping class with Carrie Mayer.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
So you actually took a class?
Yes. Yep. And in that class, they kind of walk you through the most important things to know, the common sort of pitfalls and mistakes that folks make and how to keep bees healthy.
Mm-hmm. You take a class and then you go into the actual experience and you think you know so much and you go and you're like, I don't know anything. Like it's got a huge learning curve.
And get your sorting. Where do you get your bees to start?
Mail.
Yeah. She the mail?
No, it's kind of odd because it's this totally different. Like, how do you even start this? But you can order a package of bees, and it's like this about 3 pounds of bees. And then there's this little queen in the middle, and then you put them in the box. How I did it is there was a person who organized a pickup where they would drive out and they would buy the bees from a beekeeper and they'd bring them all up at once. And that's how I got mine. Some people would get them from local beekeepers if they have too much, or they're just looking to offload.
Yeah, so there's lots of different ways, right? The Bee Club or Humboldt County Beekeepers is really supportive in helping kind of facilitate that. So you will just sort of either get them in the mail at the post office or meet somebody in a parking lot. And they open the back of the truck and there's a bunch of bees back there.
Say they.
Or this didn't have his helmets.
In the parking lot.
You just put them in your car and sip all the earth so they don't start tip the fairies to be a leopard, don't you?
But there's another way you can get bees, which is catching a swarm. So there's a swarm list if you look up Humboldt County Swarms and you can call someone and Angela or I might be the person that comes. And so you never know what you're walking into when you're getting a swarm. A swarm of bees has a queen and about half the hive. And they leave a new queen in the hive with the other half of the bees, and the other hive is going off and looking, or the other half of the hive is going off and looking for a new place to live.
Those people will see a swarm,
yes,
and if the bee, like, oh no, there's a swarm of bees, and call you, and you'll go, and how do you get those bees?
Various ways. You take by a ladder.
Yeah,
yeah, and you have to feed this dumb.
Yeah. They can be very mellow at that phase because they're all focused on finding a home. So you can almost just sort of grab them with your hands.
Oh, no.
Put them into a box.
Well,
sometimes it's more complicated. People have modified vacuums and other systems. I'm not that fancy. So you can collect bees, get them in the mail, get them from a neighbor or a friend.
If you collect a swarm, then
you have to take care of that swarm.
Yeah.
So how many bees do you have now?
That flexes throughout the year. Right now, I actually have 3 hives. I had 13 over the summer. And
13 hives?
13 hives, yeah, 13 colonies. And it was a big personal project to get that down. It was too much for me. But I'm at 3 right now. Going number 1, 2, or 3.
So 13, and then you gave those hives away?
No, I just reduced them down using various beekeeping tactics and gave away some certains.
Beekeeping tactics.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of different strategies you can do depending on what your goal might be with the bees or with your beekeeping or what you want to produce with the bees. And my personal goal was to not have 13 hives anymore because it was so much work. So yeah, just kind of combining them, narrowing them down to the point where I have a more manageable.
So does that mean some of the bees are swarming then somewhere, or just
some did? Yeah, some naturally swarmed, and there's things that you can do once the bees have swarmed depending on what you want to do. Like if you want to try to reproduce another queen or another colony out of that. But what I did, instead of trying to preserve, you know, a full colony, I would just combine it with another colony just to make combine 2 into 1. So instead of expanding, I would just kind of narrow them down every single time. Yeah.
You know what it sounds like, as you talk about beekeeping, it sounds as though you guys are nerds.
Yeah.
It's easy to geek out.
Really?
Really easy to go out on. Why?
And like, seriously, I really want to understand how you can, as you say, geek out on beekeeping. I'm trying to understand the attraction.
Yeah. Oh, you don't like getting stung or...
Just spending hours sweating in a bee suit.
Yes, and yeah, quite true. I want to just be a go-to stare and say, oh, made it in Hunter County. Done deal. So what's the... Oh,
like, so many different parts. Like, it's such a scientific hobby. Like, it's such a satisfying hobby on so many different levels. Like, I started beekeeping because I thought it would just be this natural extension of, you know, what we do in our yard. We have livestock, we have gardens, we have all this stuff. I'm like, hey, that fits. And I thought it would be like a couple bee boxes we have in our yard and we just get honey every year. But I didn't realize how intensive it was. Like, there's just so much biology involved. So wigging out on the biology is really satisfying. The products, like honey is really neat. Beeswax is really neat. Like there's all these different products you can harvest within the hive. That's really neat. It's a cool community thing. Like you make friends from it and it's really cool. Something to have, you know, something that's always a hobby that's always like giving to you and you can bond over it with people.
Imagine it's somewhat competitive sometimes, isn't it? Or can it be as competitive?
It can be. Like some people like to, you know, take pride in the knowledge that they know more than other people, mainly, or that they have more hives. But I feel like it's pretty cooperative. In Humboldt County, it's really cooperative. And then just like the nonstop learning, like she was saying, like you think you go in knowing something, but then you see something totally different. Like you're always wondering, what are they going to do? Trying to anticipate their needs. For me, it keeps me looking forward to every season because you're always planning for the next season. You're trying to keep the bees as happy as possible. They always keep you on your toes. Like they always keep you on your toes. And the minute you think you know a whole lot, they'll do something to just humble you down to the studs.
And does it? It's related to being stung, so you have to learn from your experiences?
Yeah, I don't mind being stung. I kind of held my own.
Wait, we kind of, okay, yeah, we have to talk a little bit about that.
What's it when you get stung? I have a little bit more of an adrenaline response when I get stung. And so that's not like necessarily a benefit. And it's because I'm being clumsy.
Okay.
Usually. But when I, you know, you could successfully check a hive and not get stung, but I think I'm kind of clumsy, so I get stung. A lot.
Okay. I like the adrenaline rush. Like for me, I like that. Like it feels really good. I enjoy it. And I don't recommend this for home at all, but some people are really big on bee sting therapy and you can like
sting your knowledge. Therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. There's apiculture is like a study of things you can do with bee products. And so one of the products is bee stings that you can harvest from a hive. And there is or apitherapy, sorry. And there's like a big apitherapy belief that stings will
produce certain effects within the body that might be beneficial. So one of them is like reduced, at first you might swell from the bee sting, but eventually like your swelling might go down, or you might develop an immunity, or if you have pain in certain areas and you sting them, that pain might go down. And I've had that in my experience. So I don't put it when I get stung. I've stung myself on purpose before, which people think is super weird. But I don't
have to. The middle, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't want that done. Except people get stung in the face for like youthfulness.
And... Mm-hmm, yeah, like to enlarge your lips and stuff. Yeah. I don't see myself in the face on purpose, but I have been stung in the face. And it is an adrenaline. One time I had a really bad cold and I got stung right on the nose and my cold went away.
Well,
I think it was the adrenaline rush. It just kind of flushed everything else. I felt like I got punched in the face for a couple days. But
is it true that the bees die when they sting you, though?
No. Oh, the hyacinth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
So, how many hives do you have?
I have, I think, 8 right now. I had a lot this summer. I have 2 locations. I keep them up at my home in Neyland, and then my friend has a pumpkin patch in Arcata Bottoms, Hetty's Harvest, and so I keep my bees there to help pollinate his farm, and that's really where this got kind of spiraled out of control as a hobby, having those 2 locations. But it's been really fun to see the differences in those 2 locations.
So it's no longer a hobby?
Well, I think it's still hobby level, but... it's getting out of control a little bit. But I am a tree person, a plant person, nature person. And so for me, it's really cool to see the differences in those 2 locations, the color of pollen, the seasonality, when the trees are blooming. I have 2 of my honeys on the table that folks listening can't see, but one is a really dark color, and that is from the oak trees that have this tannic component in them. So that makes it this really dark sort of brown color you almost can't see through. And I've got a lighter one from the pumpkin patch. That's more of this cool kind of golden color, like a pumpkin blossom. And so the bees bring in that from nature. And I think that's really cool.
The flavors are there too.
Yeah.
If you'd like, we can iron try very much or any of
over
it.
Here.
Yeah. So we have to make sure that we're able to describe that for the people that are listening.
Which is part of honey tasting. There's just that one other thing, the honey tasting. Exactly, yeah. Like, there's just so many different things you can get into from bees, and honey tasting is one. Like, there are only those get tissue, and
that would be fun.
While Angela is getting that out, I have a little wheel from UC Davis on from their pollinator center on the honey flavor wheel. So you can sort of use this to describe, much like you would wine or other sort of foodie related type products, the flavors that you're tasting. So, I mean, there's everything kind of a nutty flavor to more floral type flavors on the wheel that help you taste.
When I first moved here, I had really bad allergies, and someone told me to eat the local honey and that would help with your allergies. And I did, and it did. And I don't know if that's just anecdotal.
Well, I'm very excited for today because. Because you might write the note to
there. That it's a good way to...
Just about in belief, yeah. Is sometimes you think, oh, would have how much science have we seen on that? Like, I don't know if it's been scientifically like proven or debunked, but there's a lot of anecdotal
really
stories of allergies helping because it's foraged in the local area. Although there's not pollen in the honey specifically, like you can't have a beehive without having pollen in it. Like, it's just ubiquitous. It's everywhere within the hive. So you have exposures to at least little bits. And depending on how the beekeeper harvests their honey, there might be different levels of all the pollen, just all the things that are being foraged is part of the whole
forage experience. What do we have first?
Yeah, so we'll start lightest to darkest of the 5 honeys that we have here. And so this is clover blossom. So at my friend's farm, he has a cover crop to protect the soil and incorporate nitrogen into the soil. And so there was a big clover bloom, and I was able to harvest honey right after that clover bloom, before other things really took off, primarily blackberry.
What does the honey
resist? And thank you. And so this is the lightest honey. It's very clear with just sort of a faint yellow color. And I think it has sort of more of it's very, very sweet.
It is.
And sort of a floral component to that flavor. So,
That's amazing.
I just ate a cough drop, but I'm having
Okay. And so you're saying the location can dictate the color and the taste of the honey itself.
The floral resources in that Wabuchier timing. And they're feeding off of other flowers and things in people's gardens, but it's what they're predominantly going on.
Oh, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. So here's a question for you. So talk to us about what is the best memories you have of beekeeping and what are the worst memories you have of beekeeping as we do more tasting?
Well, I can talk about how I met where I became friends with Angela.
Oh, please.
Part of this. So I had sort of my first, I'm not sure if this is better to hand this to you. But
okay, so which one is this?
This is the pumpkin patch. And this has a more of an earthy flavor.
Very
compared to clover. And I should let you describe it for me.
I thought Nikki did really, really well.
I think it tastes how summer fields smell. It has sort of this earthy flavor, and it's not quite as sweet as that clover blossom to me, but still really nice.
There's some nice after finish to it.
That's right.
After finish. Mm.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, there's like different levels. And with honey, the idea with honey tasting is to, there's actually like specific levels to doing it. Like you want the honey warm. You want to smell it. You want to put it in your mouth. You want to let it coat your tongue. And then you observe the textures of it because honeys have might different textures. They might have different ways that they're coating the tongue, coating the mouth. There might be different flavors that you're getting at different points in your taste and experience. There's like a whole formal protocol for honey tasting.
You are geeking out on honey.
Oh my ours. Right on.
And when you said it should be warm, because I always have that problem, because here in Humboldt County, everything is, cold.
Mm-hmm, crystallizes.
And I never know how to like warm the honey without changing the flavor or burning it or
how. Yeah, I kind of want to talk about like that brings me one of the things I want to talk about is like how bees will extract honey and how crystallization plays into that. So we'll put that one on the table. But for warming honey, keeping it out of direct sunlight is helpful because the direct sunlight sometimes can degrade the properties of the flavor. It won't be so much, but to keep it as pure as possible, a dark, warm place can be helpful, or putting it in a warm water bath, keeping it below, like I think 105 degrees will keep things just preserved without degrading the texture.
I heard 105.
Mm-hmm.
Put it in the microwave.
No, don't put it in the microwave.
Oh, I have them. Yeah, I've done that before.
Oh, no, don't do that. It will still be honey, but it just takes away like the special properties. Like some of the beneficial properties will start to die away.
It below 105.
Okay. Mm, yeah. Yeah. So a long water bath, like I have I think it's called the sous vide or something. It just kind of keeps the temperature controlled.
This tastes so
this one is mine. Yeah. This is my honey. Yeah.
Wow. This is so different.
This is from your yard.
Yes. And where's this Fortuna honey? I live in Fortuna. So this is a Fortuna honey.
It is different.
So different.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got more like a peppery finish. But anyway, sorry. Go on with your story. This is so easy. Like, it's so easy to, like, go off on other side things. But yeah, keep on going with your story.
Well, I don't... my favorite memory? That was what it was. Okay. So I started beekeeping, and I think it was my first year. And Angela had come by before the end of the school year and was like, I'm so excited. I've talked to Carrie. You're beekeeping. Here's my phone number in case anything comes up. It's really nice to talk to someone if you have questions. And I was like, okay, sure. And then I opened up my hives one day and I had all these queen cells, which means my bees were preparing to swarm. And so I texted Angela like a picture and I was like,
what do I do?
Help me. Like, I know we talked about it, but this is sort of scary to try on my own. And she sent me all these directions and called me and the directions worked perfectly. So I was able to split my bees and put a frame of pollen and a frame of honey because I had it and split the two bees. And I had a successful split my very first try, which is not always the case. But Angela's just excellent and walked me through it step by step. That was pretty fun. And so it's a fun community and helping people learn.
Mm-hmm.
And by Carrie, we were talking Carrie Mick.
Mayor, yep.
This former administrator and faculty at CR.
Yeah, one of the beekeeping crew. My favorite
beekeeping crew, yeah.
One of my favorite memories, like, I think it's kind of like a conglomeration of memories, but like the raising queens, like, I love raising queens. Like, I find it more satisfying than honey.
You have to explain why you
like what that is. Yeah.
So yeah, creating. So every colony needs to have a thriving queen in order to be, yeah, one queen. Sometimes they do have multiple queens, but typically one queen. And getting a hive to a spot like what we were going through is creating two colonies from one and having the product be a queen that is just beautiful, wonderful, doing her job. Like the whole entire colony is just doing what they're supposed to and they're all healthy. It is so, oh, it's just such a transcendental experience. I know that sounds so extreme, but it's so true.
It's a great queen that's doing really good. And
this brood pattern, yeah, their brood pattern looks great. Like, it's just nice and tight. Yeah.
So, like, this said, prior to getting out show and tell.
Oh, gosh, we sold some of these things. And
so, the order. So, what happens if you have more than one queen?
You can make some decisions from there. I've been noticing I have, it's one of those things, like, I don't know if I've always had this or I'm just now noticing, but these last couple summers, I have seen some colonies where there's two queens in existence, and it's usually where there's a mother-daughter situation where they're trying to sort themselves out, have an easier transition. I just leave them alone, you know, let the bees do their things, but it's really exciting to see because it's supposed to be not common. So when you see that happen, it's kind of a magical thing. Like, you see, I have two queens on the same frame, and they're both kind of walking peacefully, like you can't see that the bees are trying to choose one or another at that point. It's really thrilling. I usually get out my camera and take a video as soon as I can.
And so now, tell us what you brought for us today.
Let's do more. Yeah, more. Me continue on with the honey. Yeah.
Other show and tells that you had, Angela.
Well, we'll have to take a short break and then maybe you can do the
show and tells. Okay.
Because obviously, it's real easy to want to talk about a lot of stuff.
So this is the oak honey, and this is this sort of darkest color.
Different.
It's maybe a little more molasses type.
Very much, yes.
And this is from my hives in Neyland, and so they have the opportunity to sort of forage in the forest and
This is different.
Yeah, and the tan oak tannins kind of contribute to this really dark color and different flavor.
I like the dark honey a lot.
To the honey, yeah. It's also very sweet, but earthy, really
earthy. Yeah, that's a good.
And then it kind of stops at the end. Like, it just, for me, it's just like a really blunt ending.
That's so good.
So these companies that manufacture a lot of honey, and of course I see one that has a little bear on them. How do they get them so consistently the same? Because these are so different based on location. So how does that work?
Could be a lot of different ways. Honey mixing, or just producing from similar crops.
Yeah.
And so once honeys can look like similar in color, and sometimes there's some that are just more common, like clover is really, really common. What do you think?
A lot of our honey comes from sort of some larger productions rather than our backyard hobby collections. So we're able to sort of, I've harvest based on like timing of when things are blooming to get these sort of special colors. But a lot of our, you know, at a national level, our beekeeping happens on a lot of almond orchards and other fruit orchards as part of a cycle of pollinating for the food. That way we can have food at the grocery store pretty much all times of year. And so a lot of the honey that you buy is from sort of these larger productions that have more of a single source or like multi-source that can be blended together. And that's USA produced honey. There's also international honey and different things. And there's great honey. And sometimes there's honey that have additives and different things in them that might not be all honey. But if you buy from a local beekeeper,
you know
where it came from and know what's in there.
Cool. And it sounds like we have plenty of the county. So
yeah. Let's try the meadow foam.
Your last one?
Yeah, meadow foam is interesting. So these are all Yes, these are all from our
noble
hives. Yes, this one is from Oregon. Meadow foam is a native plant to the western coast, and yes, it's a really unique type of honey.
Wait, not so fast.
Yeah, and I really wanted to bring this one because it's so very different. So yeah,
casual.
Molly sniff it.
Use.
It's yeah. totally different.
How you sniff it.
And meadow foam, what is it?
It's a delightful little flower. It's got a little yellow center and white. It blooms in like early May. It's just poached the wave flower is what I think some people call it sometimes. And it there's quite a few blooms, thank you, in Oregon. And
it's used in cosmetics.
Yes.
And yeah, other hand creams with oil. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, good to know.
But what do you taste when you're tasting this? What stands out to you? And if you need to try it again, strip of the can.
Keith?
Flowery, of course. But it's a fruity type of flower. It's not like a dandelion type of flower.
Maybe like a campfire? Where you might have...
Ooh, kind of snaky a little bit, yes.
Marshmallow?
Okay.
A lot of people use this
with marshmallow. Yeah.
Rury.
Yeah. And one of my friends says that she tastes a tobacco flavor to it.
Kind of smoky type of heat.
And I have a really strong, like, metallic after finish when I dry it. Yeah, but not all people do. So maybe because I sting myself so much. I don't know. Maybe that's a special.
Well, this is my first foray into honey tasting. So my palate is not very sophisticated.
It takes time. You told it.
Yeah. But it is very interesting.
You're doing great.
Doing great.
It's just fun to eat. Like, even if you're like, I don't know all the terms, like, who's going to not want to eat all this honey? And meadow foam's a really fun one. It's always, yeah.
So what's the biggest seller in Humboldt County with top of honey? I guess it depends on your palate, right? So
yeah, and I think also...
Is it like a lighter color, darker color, or just...
I talked with a beekeeper before who has a lot of this and actually a little bit more wood, like the darker tan oak, like later season possibly. It's his honey is very acrid and it's not particularly a nice yummy honey to eat, but it sells a lot because it tastes like the area and it's really nice. So for him, that's actually a really big sell. Yeah, it's a big seller. So I think it's sometimes maybe more driven by who you know, like people want to support their beekeeper, who they're closest to, like what their access is. I don't know necessarily, unless you have an opinion, like what type of honey might sell.
The easy way to really label honey based on the predominant floral source, right? So that's how we have this clover, pumpkin blossom, and oak, and Fortuna Awesome honey. But the predominant floral source in Humboldt County really is blackberry, that we have a large blackberry bloom. And so probably when you are looking for local honey, it's totally okay to be looking for what's called wildflower honey, because that's, you know, you don't have something really specific you're drawing from. It's probably blackberry.
Okay, so I'm looking at this oak honey. This is supposed to be yours, Valerie?
Yes.
Now, and the label has Hobie's
Hobie.
Kobe's honey.
Yeah.
Who's Hobie?
Yeah, Hobie is my doll.
Okay.
She's a 10-year-old chocolate lab. She's sort of a reluctant beekeeper, actually. She gets a little bored when I'm working in the bee yard and the bees make her a little bit nervous, to be totally honest, but she's very my biggest supporter and will enjoy honey if I give it to her, I suppose. But yeah, the little label has a little photo.
Oh, that's nice.
I do, yeah. And give them away to gift. I've got
really.
Really? I'm too special. Okay, Molly, I get it. Actually, right now, I do have a shot and that's done for you. Oh, no, the pop.
mine is just
for... Oh, brother,
I know.
So okay.
Hey, that is so much better.
Well, we have to take a short break, but I want to thank Valerie and Angela for being with us.
This was a pleasure.
Yeah.